Welcome back to the South Harbor Church podcast. South Harbor is a part of the Harbor Churches, which exist to help people find their way back to God. This week, we'll be continuing our series, Lesser Gods, with a message that asks us to confront the idol of self. As always, be sure to stick around after the message for more information on how you can connect with the South Harbor Church community. And now, here's Pastor Tim.
And if you want to follow along in a Bible this morning, we are going to be looking in this book of Judges. Chapter 13 will begin, and it's a story of a guy named Samson. You know the story of the guy named Samson? I love to tell this story. This story is, growing up, this was my favorite story in the entire Bible. Easily my favorite story in the entire Bible. This story's got a little bit of everything. It's got action. It's got some drama to the story, like what's going to happen next. It's got love, like there's a love angle in the story. It's got a little bit of everything, but so we're going to look at it this morning. If you're unfamiliar with the story of Samson, you're going to walk out with an understanding, but my guess is for a lot of us, we grew up hearing the story of Samson. A couple warnings before we dive in. First warning, the story of Samson is long. Let me just warn you on the front end. It takes up a full 4 chapters in the Bible, and we're going to read quite a bit of it. So now, I know for those of you who've been coming a while, you're like, that's no different than any other week. Exactly. But if you're new with us, you just got to know this about us, at least. I get like an allergic reaction to superficial or cliche. Like, we want to actually study it. We want to engage your mind. I don't know why Christians would ever get associated with being closed-minded, because the words of Jesus are always open your eyes to see, open your minds to understand. So we're going to be thinking a little bit today. We're going to go into the story a little bit today. That's the first warning. The first warning is it's long. Second warning is this one is a story that many of us know, kind of. Okay, so my guess is a lot of us, we think we know the story, and there are parts of the story that we certainly do know. Samson had long hair, Delilah, some of those pieces of the story. However, this is one of those stories that when you actually start to... So a lot of us know the kids' version of the story, if we're honest. But there is an adult version of the story. It's in your Bible. We'll keep it as PG as we can, but just going to warn you, it's a little different than the kids' version. In fact, I was talking to somebody before the service. I'll leave her nameless. But Chelsea Vinord said to me before the service that this was the story that when she saw the story of Samson in context for the very first time, this was the story that for her, like, wow, the Bible, as I was presented as a kid, is a lot deeper than I thought initially. There are lots of other layers to it. So is that fair? Okay, that's fair. So it begins in Judges chapter 13. Try to follow along. There will be a test later. Okay, so try to follow along. Judges chapter 13, let's begin in verse 1. Again, the Israelites did evil in the eyes of the Lord. So the Lord delivered them into the hands of the Philistines for 40 years. Let's pause there. A couple things that in the very first sentence, a little backstory that is going to be really important to the story that we're going to look at, the story of Samson. A couple pieces. Something to do with a people, and then something to do with, a people and then a pattern. First, a people. And I left my, you've got it. You're going to throw it again. Okay. So first, a people. Now, in the story, we read about a group of people called the Philistines. On a map here, like I said, I love a good map. This is a good map, too. This is kind of a fun map. The Dead Sea, you see here, you kind of see, like, the map is turned on the side, right? You get that? So we're trying to show the mountain ranges here, because this story this morning is going to happen in the Sorek Valley. Delilah is from the Sorek Valley. Now, The group of people that we're introduced to are the Philistines. The Philistines occupy the coastal plains. They occupy the coast. We think they're from Greece. They came in from Greece, and they occupy this land. Now, the Israelites at this time, Samson's people, occupy this land. The battle's going to be fought in this land. This land, the valleys. Oh, by the way, this is the Elah Valley. What story happens in the Elah Valley? Anybody know? David and Goliath. Okay, so that happens here. Anyway, Sorek Valley is right here. I could go on forever. The Sorek Valley is here. Now, you can see that, okay, this is the farmland. Like, this whole area is really pretty good farmland. So whoever has this land kind of controls the farming and the produce. That's going to come in the story as well. But also, you'll notice that you're in the foothills here. These are mountains, but you're in the foothills here. However, where the Sorek River cuts through, you have a pretty direct path to some of the central cities of Israel, Jerusalem, Bethlehem. The capital at the time was up here. So you have some access to some key cities if you follow the Sorek Valley. So your dilemma in this particular story is the Philistines want to control this, because if they control this, they control the route to the Dead Sea, they can control the route out even further east, and the Israelites want to protect this. So the Israelites are pushing this way, they're pushing west, and the Philistines are pushing east. Does this make sense? Now, in the story we read, the Philistines have been in control for 40 years. This is by far the longest period of time in the book of Judges, in which the Israelites are crying out to God, or the Israelites are not following the ways of God. It's longer than anyone else. It's been 40 years, and the Philistines have taken control. So they're controlling the road, essentially. Okay. First, a people. Second, a pattern. A pattern. Chapter 13 begins. Again, the Israelites did evil in the eyes of the Lord. Again, the Israelites did evil. Why the word again? Well, there is a pattern. And if you start looking for the pattern that runs throughout the book of Judges, again, if you were with us last week or the week before, we talked about how judges are military leaders. So don't think gavel, they're military, they're generals. There is a pattern that runs throughout the book of Judges. And the pattern is, for instance, Judges chapter 6 begins like this. The Israelites did evil in the eyes of the Lord, and for 7 years he gave them into the hands of the Midianites. It's the exact same word. So here's the pattern. First, the Israelites will do evil in the eyes of the Lord. Then, a second, God will deliver them into the hands of a foreign empire, a foreign nation. So in the story of Samson, it's the Philistines. In this particular story, Judges 6, it's the Midianites, but it's always a foreign nation. And then third, the people will cry out. So Judges 6, verse 7 says, when the Israelites cried out to the Lord because of Midian, he sent them. And then fourth, God sends a deliverer. He sent them a prophet. So the pattern, the people do evil in the eyes of the Lord. Then God hands them over to an enemy nation. Third, the people cry out to God. And then fourth, God sends them a deliverer. Are you good with the pattern? Another example, Judges 10. We read this story last week. Beginning at verse 6. See if you can identify the pattern. Again, the Israelites did evil in the eyes of the Lord, and because the Israelites forsook the Lord and no longer served him, he became angry with them. He sold them into the hands of the Philistines and the Ammonites. We looked at the Ammonites last week, who that year shattered and crushed them. And then if you jump down to verse 10, then the Israelites cried out to the Lord, and chapter 11 is God raises up a judge by the name of Jephthah. You see the pattern? First, the Israelites do evil in the eyes of the Lord. Second, God hands them over to the hands of a foreign oppressor. Third, the people cry out to God, help us, save us. And then fourth, God sends a deliverer, a judge. Back to our story, verse 1. Again, the Israelites did evil in the eyes of the Lord, so the Lord delivered them into the hands of the Philistines for 40 years. A certain man of Zorah named Manoah from the clan of the Danites had a wife who was childless, unable to give birth. The angel of the Lord appeared to her and said, you are barren and childless, but you are going to become pregnant and give birth to a son. Now, see to it that you drink no wine or other fermented drink and that you do not eat anything unclean. You will become pregnant and have a son whose head is never to become touched by a razor, because the boy is to be a Nazarite, dedicated to the Lord from the womb. He will take the lead in delivering Israel from the hands of the Philistines. Then the woman went to her husband and told him, a man of God came to me. He looked like an angel of God. Very awesome. Which, by the way, I love that line. I think it was an angel. He looked awesome. Anyway, story. You have the pattern. Do you see the pattern in the story? But there's something missing in the pattern. It stands out when you look at the pattern that runs throughout the book of Judges. Something is missing in this story. A part of the pattern is gone. Now, look at the story. Do the Israelites do evil in the eyes of the Lord? Yes. Okay, so that's there. Do the Israelites get conquered by an enemy nation? Yes, that's there. Does God send a deliverer? Yes, Samson will be their deliverer. What's missing? People don't cry out. key point in the story. The people don't cry out to God. They're oppressed, but it's been 40 years. It seems as though, the hint in the story, is that the people have forgotten God. The Philistines have been in charge. They forget God. Big problem. However, God doesn't forget them. And so God sees his people who, they've forgotten him, but he doesn't forget them. And God sends up, God sends an angel who looks very awesome. And he sends this angel to a couple, and this couple has not been able to have kids. And this angel says to this couple, you're going to have a boy. And this boy is going to set you free. He's going to be a deliverer. Now, here's where the story gets a bit weird. Because the angel goes on to say the angel that looks awesome, says some things to the couple about this boy. There are some kind of odd rules that this kid's going to have to follow if he's going to do this. So if he's going to lead the people, he's got to follow some weird rules. Now, the specific rule that you read here is about his hair. But you also have another detail mentioned about a vow called the Nazirite vow, raising the existential question, what is a Nazirite vow? If you have a Bible, turn to me to Numbers chapter 6, verse 1. God, in the book of Numbers, gives some specific rules for how his people are to live amongst each other. But if you really want it, if you really want to follow him, God says there is a special vow, a special set of rules you can follow. Paul in the New Testament for a season follows these rules. Samuel, the prophet, follows these rules for a season, but Samson is supposed to follow him his whole life. Notice the rules. There's three major rules. Verse 1, the Lord said to Moses, speak to the Israelites and say to them, if a man or woman wants to make a special vow, a vow of dedication to the Lord as a Nazirite, they must abstain from wine and other fermented drink and must not drink vinegar made from wine or other fermented drink. They must not drink grape juice or eat grapes or raisins. As long as they remain under the Nazirite vow, they must not eat anything that comes from the grapevine, not even the seeds or skins. So rule number one, don't eat or drink anything from a vine. Rule number two, during the entire period of their Nazirite vow, no razor may be used on their head. They must be holy until the period of their dedication to the Lord is over. They must let their hair grow long. Number two, you can't go into the barbershop and say, I'll do a number one on the side and number two on the top. No, no razor. Number three, throughout the period of their dedication to the Lord, the Nazirite must not go near a dead body. Even if their own father or mother or brother or sister dies, they must not make themselves ceremonially unclean on account of them, because the symbol of their dedication to God is on their head. Though throughout the period of their dedication, they are consecrated to the Lord. If someone dies suddenly in the Nazirite's presence, thus defiling the hair that symbolizes their dedication, they must shave their head on the seventh day, the day of their cleansing. So, three rules. You can't eat or drink anything that grows in a vine, number one. Number two, who's got it? No haircuts. And then number three, you guys are good. You can't touch anything dead. And not just you can't touch anything dead, but nothing can die in your presence. Now a question. If nothing can even die in your presence, according to verse 9, can you go to war? Can you, if you're a Nazirite living under the vow, can you kill? No. Nothing. Now, do you see the dilemma? God says, the Philistines, they've been hurting my people for 40 years. I'm going to raise up a leader, a military general by the name of Samson. However, Samson, rule number three, you're not allowed to fight. What is going on in the story? Let's connect a couple dots, and then we're going to dive in. We're still in introduction, but let me connect a couple dots. We started with a pattern. What was missing in the pattern? They don't cry out. Okay, so the part missing in the pattern is the people don't cry out to God. Then God, a very awesome angel, comes to a couple who can't have kids, and the very awesome angel says, you're going to have a boy, but there's a couple rules this kid's going to have to follow. Why the rules? Here's what I propose to you, potentially. Maybe what God has understood is it's been 40 years, and these people, my people, They, for 40 years, have not even thought to cry out to me. So I am going to send them a deliverer because I cannot stand to see my people in pain. But this deliverer is going to have to look different. He's going to have to cause them to ask some questions. What I don't want them to do is think, oh, Samson, he's our hero, and still bow down to these other gods. They'll find themselves back in slavery. I need them to say to Samson, why do you live the way you live? Why do you do the things you do? Why is your hair look like it looks? Like everyone else's hair. Let me show you. We found some cave drawings of Philistines. That's their haircut. Again, it's a one on the side. Right, Brenda? One on the sides. Probably not a two on the top. But it's Brad Pitt and Fury. That's the style of the Philistines. It is short on the sides. The Philistines, always short, buzzed on the sides, a little bit longer on the top, but still pretty tight on the top. That's how the Philistines wore their hair. How is a good Jewish boy supposed to wear his hair, according to the Old Testament law? Curly cues, right? God says, I want you to look the opposite. I want you to look the opposite of the Philistines. You're supposed to stand out. You're supposed to walk around and people say, you're not a Philistine. You wear your hair different than them. But now, if the Philistines have been in charge for 40 years, how do you think, and they've forgotten to cry out to God, how do you think the Israelites are wearing their hair, more than likely? One on the sides, two on the top. Give me the Philistine haircut. So God says, they're not even crying out to me. I want to raise up a kid. And this kid's got to be different. This kid's going to walk into class, and they're going to laugh at him probably. They're going to say things like, hey, Samson, why is your hair different? Why the dreadlocks, Samson? No one's wearing dreadlocks. Not cool, Samson. When he gets older, he's going to show up to the party, and everyone's going to look at Samson and say, Samson, what? Are you like DDing? Like, why aren't you drinking, Samson? Everyone here is having a good time on wine. Why are you sober, Samson? And then he's going to, even more obvious, he's going to go to the cookout. Everyone's going to be talking about their exploits in war. Samson, why weren't you in the battle? Where were you? We went hunting. By the way, anybody get anything yet? Yeah? Nice. We went hunting. Where were you, Samson? Oh, I can't kill. We're going to have some steaks on the grill, Samson. You want a steak? You want a burger? They're delicious. I can't touch the flesh of, I can't touch dead bodies. Samson, his entire life is supposed to look different. God wants to use him to do something amazing, but he's supposed to look different. You with me so far? Okay, now we're about to get into the story. So the three rules, once again, let's review. An awesome angel shows up. What are the rules? No haircuts. No vine. Yeah, no vine. Yeah. Can't stay up past midnight. You can't get wet. That's the gremlin. So, no, yeah, you can't touch a dead body. So now keep those three rules in mind because Samson is going to, okay, let me just say this in the front. We're going to read the story of Samson. And for some of you, I'm going to ruin the story. And I'm sorry on the front end because Samson, if you grew up thinking Samson, strong guy, superhero, Samson, what a good man. Samson's not. He's strong. He is that. But he's not a bright man. You're going to see this. He's not a very smart guy. If you were to take your ear and you were to hold your ear up against his ear, you could hear the ocean. That's Samson. There's not a lot going on here. If Samson were to show up today, like I was trying to describe what Samson would probably look like today, more than likely he has a mullet. Okay, I realize I had a mullet less than 3 months ago, so don't judge me. But more than likely, Samson's the guy that if Samson were showing up today, he probably cheers for Ohio State. Not a nice guy, not a smart guy, right? If you like Ohio State, I'm so sorry. I mean, God loves you too, but the rest of us, jury's out. Samson's probably the guy that when you meet Samson, he probably refers to people as chief. Hey, chief. Ugh. Samson's the guy that you do the Christmas exchange. It's like, okay, we'll spend $50. You get mom, I'll take whatever. Like, we'll exchange names. And it's $50, and Samson finds something on clearance for $15, and he says, yeah, but it was worth $50. The worst. Samson's the guy that forwards you the long emails that at the bottom of the email, it says, if you don't forward this on to 10 people, you don't love puppies or veterans or whatever. It's like, I don't, that doesn't mean that. I don't want to forward on your emails. That's Samson, okay? You follow? Samson, now you're thinking, that's not fair, Tim. Oh, you're probably right. Samson's actually way worse. Let me read you the story. Way worse. This is the story. Now, okay. The story itself is a bit long. We're like one chapter through the story, and we got three to go. Story's a bit long. I'm aware of like the time commitments, the time restraints we have. However, I've tried everything I could to shorten up the story. And what I discovered is what if I bullet point the story and just kind of give the story? That didn't feel right. And I tried to create like a top 10 worst Samson moments from the story, but that didn't feel right. I think the best way to do the story is to read the story, like actually read it. But it's a bit long. We won't read the whole thing, but I want to read you at least a chapter of the story so you get a feel for the story. But the story's long, and my attention span is short. I don't know about you, but my attention span is short. It's hard for me to read long pieces without like thinking about other things. So I'm gonna need your help on the story so that we can stay with the story, so that the story like starts to resonate a bit. So you remember the three vows? Remember the three? When we come across a vow, here's what I want you to do. When we come across a vow that Samson breaks, something he's supposed to do as a Nazirite, but he doesn't do, because remember, he cheers for Ohio State. When he comes across something that he's not supposed to do, I want you to say compromise. Okay, so, well, for instance, let's practice. If I were to say to you, and then Samson had a glass of wine. Good, nice, well done. Okay, I always hate it when people make me say things in church. So if you don't want to, you don't have to. But if you want to, help me out. Now, it's not just compromises that Samson does. Samson also does a lot of things that aren't necessarily breaking the vow, but they're just not very smart. They're just kind of dumb. So it's not really a compromise, but it's probably more, it's just dumb. So how about when we come across something in the passage that's not smart? So Samson drank a glass of wine. Compromise. But if we come across something that's not smart, how about we say together, Ohio State? Does that work? Can we say that? So anytime something dumb happens, Ohio State. Okay, let's read the story. Oh, man. Okay, Samson, verse 1, Samson of chapter 14. Samson went down to Timnah and saw there a young Philistine woman. Ohio State! Well done. Gonna say it with conviction. Yes, that is not dumb. The Philistines are the enemies. When he returned, he said to his father and mother, I have seen a Philistine woman in Timnah. Now you go get her for me as my wife. Ohio State. That's Ohio State for sure, Ohio State. He's supposed to be a religious Jew. You're supposed to honor your father and mother. You're not supposed to boss around your mom and dad. Samson, come on. Verse 3. His father and mother replied, isn't there an acceptable woman among your relatives or among all our people? Must you go to the uncircumcised Philistines to get a wife? But Samson said to his father, get her for me. She's the right one for me. His parents did not know this was from the Lord, who was seeking an occasion to confront the Philistines, for at that time they were ruling over Israel. Samson went down to Timnah together with his father and mother. As they approached the vineyards of Timnah, compromise. Why? Vineyards, right? Now technically he's not in the vineyard yet, so I guess he's not technically compromised. But so now you got Ohio State, and it's also a little bit Ohio State, right? It's a little dumb because you're going to a spot where it's like all the temptation is to compromise. You're not supposed to go to the vineyard. Suddenly, a young lion came roaring toward him. The Spirit of the Lord came powerfully upon him, so that he tore the lion apart with his bare hands, as he might have torn a young goat. I love how the author assumes that we all know how that is. Oh, like a young goat. Okay. Compromise. Hey, compromise. Samson kills a lion. Is Samson supposed to kill? No. Now, a couple details in the story, because this is the part in the story that I think you start to see kind of what God is up to in the story. Two details. First detail, we are told that the lion is a young lion. It is a baby lion. It is, when you picture the story, don't think like big, strong adult lion. Think young lion cub. And the lion is roaring. It's not chasing. So if you're immediately like, what about, this has got to be self-defense. This is senseless violence on this lion. But then you get to the detail and it's like, well, it says here, the Spirit of the Lord comes on him so that he could kill the lion. That word so that, second detail, the word so that isn't in the original Hebrew. It simply says that the Spirit of the Lord rushes upon Samson and he kills the lion. Here's what I propose is going on, and I stand on the shoulders of people way smarter than me in proposing this. I propose to you, and many of us propose to you, that what is going on here, what is a lion throughout the scriptures? Who gets referred to as a lion throughout the scriptures? More than likely, this is God saying, don't go in the vineyard. What are you doing? This is your vow. And the Spirit of God comes upon Samson and says, what are you doing? You're not supposed to go in the vineyard. And how does Samson respond? Kill that lion. Let me quote you. This is a guy by the name of Brad Gray writes a book on the life of Samson. My opinion, best book on Samson you'll find. It's called Mark the Moment, I believe. But he says this. He says, this is foundational to the Samson narrative. On three different occasions, the Spirit of the Lord rushes upon the scene and confronts Samson about the choices before him. And on all three occasions, Samson essentially says to the Spirit, get lost, and then proceeds to do whatever he wants. You catch this? The Spirit of God's not giving him the strength to violate the vows. The Spirit of God is rushing on him to say, stop it. You're going to break the vows. You're supposed to look different. Verse 6, but he told neither his father nor his mother what he had done. Then he went down and talked with the woman, and he liked her. He liked her. Sometime later, when he went back to marry her, he turned aside to look at the lion's carcass, and in it he saw a swarm of bees and some honey. He scooped out the honey with his hands, and he ate it as he went along. Compromise! When he rejoined his parents, he gave them some, and they ate it too. But he did not tell them about what he had done. That he had taken honey from the lion's carcass. Ohio State. Okay, so we got compromise in Ohio State here. He's not supposed to touch a dead body. But in addition, do you remember the vow his mom was supposed to make? She wasn't either. Remember this? When the super awesome angel looking dude, that guy, when he comes, he says, no, you're not allowed to touch death either. Samson tricks her into breaking her vow. Now, his father went down to see the woman. And there Samson held a feast, as was customary for young men. By the way, customary for which kind of young men? Philistine young men, not Jewish young men. When the people saw him, they chose 30 men. They chose 30 men. Probably he didn't have friends, right? So they chose 30 men to be his companions. Let me tell you a riddle, Samson said to them. By the way, pay attention to this riddle. This riddle, Samson's super funny, clever riddle is going to cause so many problems. Let me tell you a riddle, Samson said to them. If you can give me the answer within the 7 days of this feast, I will give you 30 linen garments and 30 sets of clothes. If you can't tell me the answer, you must give me 30 linen garments and 30 sets of clothes. Tell us the riddle, they said. Let's hear it. He replied, out of the eater, something to eat. Out of the strong, something sweet. A lot of crazy is going to happen because of that riddle. Samson's really clever riddle. For 3 days, they could not give the answer. On the fourth day, they said to Samson's wife, coax your husband into explaining the riddle for us, or we will burn you and your father's household to death. Okay, that seems like an exaggerated response. Did you invite us here to steal our property? Then Samson's wife threw herself on him, sobbing, you hate me. You don't really love me. You've given my people a riddle, but you haven't told me the answer. I would say Ohio State to that. Anytime, by the way, men, if you're not married, if you make your wife sob on your honeymoon, Ohio State, that's a very Ohio State thing to do. I haven't even explained it to my father or mother, he replied. And by the way, Ohio State, can we just admit, like, they look really, really good this year? I'm just going to say that. But Michigan's going to beat them. I haven't even explained it to my father or mother, he replied. So why should I explain it to you? She cried the whole 7 days of the feast. So on the seventh day, he finally told her because she continued to press him. She in turn explained the riddle to her people. And here's the riddle. Before sunset on the seventh day, the men of the town said to him, ah, what is sweeter than honey? What is stronger than a lion? That's the riddle. The honey he got out of the lion, that's the answer to his riddle. This really random moment in his life, he's like, oh, that, notice what's going to happen. Samson said to them, so they get the riddle right. If you had not plowed with my heifer,
"If you had not plowed with my heifer, you would not have solved my riddle." Somebody please say Ohio State. Ohio State! If I have to explain why, you may be Ohio State. Then the Spirit of the Lord came powerfully upon him. He went down to Ashkelon, struck down 30 of their men, stripped them of everything, and gave their clothes to those who had explained the riddle. So not just he's going to give clothes, he's going to kill people and take their clothes, and then he'll give them the answer. Which, by the way, he's going to kill people. Compromise. Yeah, more death, more killing. God continues to say, you're supposed to look different. He continues to compromise. Burning with anger, he returned to his father's home, and Samson's wife was given to one of his companions who had attended him at the feast. It's a good story, isn't it? It's got a little bit of everything. Like now, so the story, this chapter 14 ends. We have two chapters left, by the way. Chapter 14 ends, and it's now, what's going to happen? What's Samson going to do next? His wife, he just married this woman. He's been sobbing for 7 days, but his wife has been given by her dad to one of his best men. How do you think Samson's going to respond to that? He tears apart lions. That's what Samson does. How is he going to respond to this? Now, you should read the story on your own. We don't have time to get into the entire narrative, but it is interesting, so let me give you the cliff notes. We're halfway through the story, but let me give you the cliff notes for the next two chapters, and you should read it all, but it gets crazy really, really, really fast. What happens next? So, Samson's wife gets handed over to his best man. Samson comes back from killing these 30 people, comes back to dad, father-in-law, and he says, "Hey, where's my wife?" His father-in-law says, "I gave her to one of your friends. I don't know where you went. I gave her to one of your friends." Samson says, and I quote, "Now I have to get even." So, like, I gotta get even. So, how does Samson get even? Well, how would you get even? He does the same thing you would do. He takes 30 foxes, ties them together at the tails, puts a torch between each of their tails, and sets them running through the Sorek Valley, where they burn down all the Philistines' crops. Just like you would do. Then, as a response, they say, the Philistines say, "What did you do? How did you do this? Now we gotta get even." So how do they get even? They burn at the stake, they burn mom, or they burn his wife and her dad. Samson says, "Well, how dare you do that? Now I have to get even." So how does Samson get even? I quote, "He slaughters many of them." Samson then goes, because he slaughters many of them, goes and he hides in a cave. 300 people come and they find him and they tie him up. Samson tears the ropes, and then he sees on the ground a jawbone of a donkey. He picks up the jawbone and he just starts swinging it. And we read a little detail in the story that 1,000 people die. Samson then writes a little song. His song goes like this: "With a donkey's jawbone, I have made donkeys of them." Get it? It's better in the King James. But Samson heads to the big city. He goes to the big city. Killed 1,000 people. I gotta get even. He goes to the big city, and at the big city of Gaza, he sees a prostitute, and he has to have her. She's so beautiful. He has to have her. And so he goes to have the prostitute, but it's a trap, and they're waiting at the city gates for Samson. Samson decides, oh, I know what to do here. He rips the doors of the gates, 10 foot high by 10 foot wide by 9 foot deep, rips the doors of the gates, carries the doors 36 miles. On the journey, he meets another girl. She lives in the Sorek Valley. Her name is Delilah. She's like a valley girl. She's great. He wants this Delilah. He wants Delilah. He needs to have Delilah. And so he says, I need to have Delilah. Now, we should see immediately this is not going to work out. Samson's name, and names are everything in the Hebrew culture. Samson's name in Hebrew is the name Shimshon. Let me hear you say Shimshon. Yeah, well done. Shimshon means of the light or of the day. Delilah comes from an Arabic word, Lila. Lila means of the night or of the dark. There's a hint. It's like, hello, Mr. Oil, meet Mrs. Water. Right? Like, hello, Mr. Day, meet Mrs. Night. The author is telling us this is not going to work out for you, Samson. This isn't going to. She comes to him. The Philistines come to her, actually, Delilah, and they say, if you can get the secret of Samson's strength, because he keeps like killing our people, if you can get the secret of his strength, we will give you all kinds of money. So three times she comes to Samson and says, Sammy, please, why won't you tell me your secret? I mean, just three times Samson lies to her and says, I can't tell you the secret to my strength. Or he tells her like some made up excuse. And then finally he gives in and he says, fine, I'll tell you the secret to my strength. Just leave me alone. You've been there? No? Okay. Finally, I'll tell you the secret to my strength. If you cut my hair, I'll lose my strength. Which is what happens. They cut his hair. Compromise. The last of the compromises. He's compromised on the other two. The third one, the big one, the symbol that you're keeping the other two. He now compromises. And he gets taken away. He doesn't have his strength. And the Philistines capture him. They bring him to the temple of their god, a fish-headed god named Dagon. And then they gouge out his eyes. The ending of the story of Samson is him in the temple, and he prays. By the way, first prayer Samson's done in the whole Bible. First time. Up until now, it's always about Samson. In fact, up until now, it's always about Samson's eyes. Samson sees a Philistine woman. Samson sees a prostitute. Samson sees Delilah, and I have to have her, mom and dad. I have to have her. I've seen her, and I want her. Now that Samson's eyes are gouged out, he loses his sight, he actually starts to see. And he cries out to God, God, give me one last burst of energy. God, what he says is, I want to die with the Philistines. The story ends. We tend to make it a heroic moment. It's not a heroic moment. Our Jewish friends would tell you this is not a heroic moment. This is a last moment of compromise. This is the last moment. He doesn't turn back to God and say, God, use me, help me. This is the last moment where he breaks his vow one more time. And in a final burst, he pushes the pillars. Or some will argue he pulls the pillars. We're not quite sure. But the whole temple to Dagon goes down, and with it, the Philistines. But the Philistines are going to be in the next story. And they're going to be in the next story because the Philistines, this doesn't take care of the Philistines. Not the way God wanted to take care of them. God wanted to try something different. It's a good story, isn't it? I mean, yes and no. A couple years ago, three people within the span of 2 months all recommended the same book to me. It was a book by a guy named Richard Rohr called Falling Upward, A Spirituality for the Two Halves of Life. Richard Rohr, Spirituality for the Two Halves of Life. The premise of the book, that's a really interesting book, actually. The premise of the book is when we're younger, if you think of your life as like a container, when we're younger, the point of the container is it's to build our own ego. It's to build a sense of who I am, my own worth with God, that God loves me, that I'm okay, the first half of life is about filling the container, if your life is a container. But then something happens, and it's supposed to happen. It usually comes with great pain or great failure or great loss, but some of you have gone through really significant pain in your teens or in your 20s, and this has happened earlier for you. Others never really go through it and are in their 60s or 70s, and they still haven't ever gotten past the first half of life and building their own ego. You see them a mile away, and they're still needing you to tell them how great and sweet they are. But for most people, 30s, late 20s, maybe 40s, something happens, and it's usually pain or failure or loss, and you go through a period where you recognize my life cannot just be about filling me up. It has to. It can't just be about building the container or filling it. I have to begin to pour it out. I have to begin asking other questions. I have to begin looking around and saying, who in my life am I supposed to give myself to pour myself into? First half of life matters. It's really significant. If you're in this first half of life, Samson is given three rules in his first half, right? No wine, no haircuts, no touching dead bodies. Three rules. They feel restrictive to Samson. It feels as though these rules are like restrictive. God's a killjoy. God doesn't want me to have fun. God doesn't like me doing what I want to do. It feels restrictive to Samson. So he does his own thing. Whatever seems right in his eyes, that's what Samson does. But the rules were not intended to be a killjoy. The rules were intended because God understood he wanted to use Samson for incredible purposes. Remember how the story begins? The God saw that the Israelites did evil in his eyes. God saw in his eyes that the Israelites were doing evil. Begins with God seeing. The rest of the story is, Samson, here's some rules. I want to teach you to see as I see. I want you to see as I see. You keep looking through your eyes and seeing what you want and doing what you want, but I want you to begin to see what I see. And so there's these moments where the Spirit rushes on him, where God meets him with a lion and he says, would you wake up? The first half of life really matters. I like to think of it as we have guardrails. So I grew up in a family where I was given some guardrails. Some of you are raising kids and you're trying to build those guardrails, right? Guardrails are usually, so if you think about a road, we put in guardrails where people have been on the road and realize the road isn't safe at this point. Like it turns really quick or there's a bridge and you bump into the guardrails and it'll hurt your car a little bit, but it's way better than the alternative, which is to go over the bridge. So you put in the guardrails and you bump into the guardrails. Now, the guardrails tend to be on the safe side of the street. You notice this, right? Like you put the guardrails in the safe spot. So what can happen is we can look at the guardrails and say, what are they trying to keep me out of? It's safe right there. And so you take a step over the guardrails, just one, and I can take one more. And before you know it, it slopes into some really dangerous territory. But the guardrails in the safe side of the street. God gives the boundaries to Samson. God gives a guardrail to Samson because he's trying to protect him from some things. Now, it doesn't take a lot of creativity to imagine what. Why would God say no wine? You've seen what's happened when people overconsume wine. The Philistines were the worst at it. Why would God say no, keep your hair a certain way? You're supposed to look different, Samson. You're supposed to look different. Why no touching dead bodies? Because that's how you die. You get really sick touching that. So like, say, I don't know for sure. I don't know exactly why, but there's some really practical reasons why God would say, do these three things that feel restrictive. I love hamburgers, Samson says. If you're in the first half of life, if you are lucky enough, fortunate enough to have someone in your life who loves you enough to say, don't do some things, it's really easy to look at the thou shalt not in that first half, right? Thou shalt have no other gods before me. Well, that's restrictive, God. And we miss out on the thou shalt, but thou shalt have me, God says. If you're in that first half of life, it's hard in that because often we need to bump into the guardrails to understand why the guardrails are there. I get it. At some point, say thank you. I meet lots of younger people who don't have somebody in their life who are telling them, be careful, be careful. But if you're in the second half of life, if you're in the first half, here's a couple questions you should ask. Does this help me become the man or woman God has created me to be? That's a good question to ask a lot. Does this help me? Does this decision, does this action help me? Are these friends helping me to become the person God has for me to be? Will saying yes to this opportunity help me to become the person God has for me to be? God's trying to form you. God's trying to shape you. Second half of life, that's first half. Second half of life is about pouring it out. The detail in the story, it's easy to miss. The story begins with the Israelites doing, the people did what was evil in the eyes of the Lord. Samson, throughout the whole story, does what's right in his eyes. The whole story is about his eyes. It's all about what he sees and how he lives into his eyes. Samson never lives into his potential, ever. He has a ton of it. God blessed him with it. It says, if you keep the vows, here's what I'll do. He doesn't do it. You know the story right after this? This is how the book of Judges ends. In those days, Israel had no king. Everyone did as they saw fit. Everyone did as they saw fit in their own eyes. It begins with God looking out and saying, I need you to have my eyes, Samson. And it ends with everyone doing what's right in their own eyes. That was what Samson was supposed to stop. Samson was supposed to stop it. You were supposed to gain my eyes in that first half of life so that in your second half, you could pour yourself out. For those of you who are older in the second half of life, I have a friend who says to me, he's like, you know what I've realized as I get older is there are a lot of elderly people, but there's not a lot of elders. Does that make sense to you? There's a lot of elderly people, but there's not a lot of elders. The ones that you go to for wisdom, the ones that you seek for, like when life has fallen apart, like how do I get through this season? There's a lot of people who have lots of like experiences, But there's not a lot of people who have learned how to navigate those experiences. If you're in that second half of life, we need you to pour out. We need you to take the container and to help us. Those of us who are younger, I don't know where I'm in that whole, but we need you to pour out the wisdom, because there's a whole generation right now who's trying to do what's right in our own eyes. And if you look around, it's pretty clear. But we need those who are older to say, no, it's not going to work. It's good enough for today. Would you join me in a word of prayer? Gracious Lord, I thank you, first off, that the scriptures tell stories of real people who live in real time, who deal with real actual problems. Lord, these are not two-dimensional characters, Lord, that we can't relate to. But Lord, you give us these stories of people who you have met, who you've walked with. And Lord, you give us these stories as reminders that we can choose to seek you and we can choose to follow you. Lord, we look to the example of Jesus who teaches us that our eyes can be dangerous. Lord, we look to the example of Jesus who says, it is better to be blind than to choose to not see. And so, Lord, I ask that you would form us as your church to see what you desire us to see. Help us to see the need. Help us to see the pain, Lord, and help us to say yes to stepping in. Jesus, we love you. We pray this in your name. And everybody said, amen. Would you please stand?
Well, we want to say thanks again for listening to this week's message. For more information about South Harbor Church and our community, please visit us on the web at www.southharbor.org, or you can connect with us on Facebook and Instagram at South Harbor Church. We hold our Sunday services at 9 and 11 a.m., and we would love to see you there. So until next time, we pray you have a blessed week.